St. James and for me. You know, I saw my baby there. She was stretched out on that long white table. So young, so sweet, so fair. Well, let her go, God bless her. Well, wherever her soul may be, she could have searched this whole.
Everybody, welcome back.
Hello.
To a new year and a new episode of Haunted Heads. I am currently working on swallowing a donut. It's a work in progress.
I swallowed mine already.
Okay, I think we're good. So, Mimi, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. The new year is treating you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's better than last year so far.
Hey, that's an improvement.
Anything could be better than last year. I'm glad 2017 is gone.
Yeah, well, let's hope that 2018 is going to give us a little bit more of a boost than 2017
did. It is. I'm very hopeful.
You sound very sure as well
that yes.
It's going to be, it's yes. going to be a thing.
Because it has to be.
Right. So while we were on our little hiatus, we, received absolutely no emails.
Oh.
And absolutely no Twitter stuff.
Oh, people.
So,
tweet us,
it's fine because it was Christmas and, you know, the holiday season, people are traveling, you know, they're not really okay. I'm going to hop on my computer in between my uncle's drunken ramblings and, you know, grandma lighting the cat on fire by accident or whatever. I think I just took a page out of National Lampoon's for that. Doesn't she wrap the cat or something? She wraps the cat.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And she died, too.
Does she die?
Yeah, in National Lampoon's Vacation.
Oh.
Remember she died and they put her up on the station wagon?
Oh.
Station wagon.
Yep. Mm-hmm. These are very good donuts.
They are. Glazers.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to Glazers.
Mm-hmm.
Brought in Glazers this morning.
I wish you guys could taste them.
They are very good.
I am completely covered in glaze. From Glazers. I'm trying not to get it all over this new computer. Okay. So, new year, new episodes of Haunted Heads. today, for you guys, I have the story of the Enfield poltergeist.
Oh.
I call it Call and Answer.
Cool. Nice
so,
title.
Yeah, it's a very interesting case. It was very much, I want to say, exploited by the press.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had something to do with the fact that it was just like slow news day. And they were like, yeah, there's not really anything else to report, so let's go out here where they say that there's a poltergeist.
Who knows?
But yeah, I don't know. So, yeah, pretty interesting story. Again, it involves youngsters who, you know, probably had a hand in what was going on, but I kind of explore that a little bit. Mimi, what do you have?
Well, I did the Lemp Mansion in St. Mm-hmm. Louis, which, unfortunately, you had done in season one.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a do-over, but we'll see if I picked up something a little different.
Well, you know, it's kind of a do-over, but that actual episode, that was a solo episode, because I think you were sick.
Oh, okay.
So I did Black Eyed Kids, and then I also did the Lent Mansion.
Okay.
So I kind of, sort of, did an episode about it, but there was no crosstalk.
Okay.
There was no conversation. So... it might be kind of interesting to kind of, you know, bounce ideas off each other and whatever. So before we get started, I wanted to do a shout out to Mimi's fam. Met them at your recent art show. Some very lovely pieces. If any of you guys happen to meander down there and check it out, really some beautiful work. So congrats on that. It's quite the collection.
Thank you.
So yeah, went down there and had some wine.
Yes.
And had some dessert.
Very good desserts. Shout out to Carrie from Ovation.
Oh yeah.
She it's the High Point Caterer, and the High Point is the Jewish Old Home. On Prospect, where the show was. And she's very good at desserts. Nice. Very good.
Yeah, the little donut holes.
Oh, my favorite were the little cookies.
Fabulous. And the, I think they were lemon bars?
I didn't have any of those.
Some sort of a lemon bar. I'm attracted to anything that is either lemon or yellow number 5.
Oh.
Because I grew up in the 80s, so yellow number 5 was, like, everywhere.
Okay.
It was like one of those dyes, you know, that they added to all the food.
Right.
That was probably not good for you and probably caused cancer. But
probably.
So yeah, I'm convinced that from the 80s I'm shellacked on the inside.
Oh, aren't we all? From all the preservatives.
it was a fantastic time.
Good.
Got to see some people from the Stritch community, too, that I hadn't seen in a little bit, so that was cool.
That was really nice. Were you there when Daryl was there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
And then Jeff Simple came later. I don't know if you saw him.
Oh, I missed Jeff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Steve was too sick to come.
Oh, yeah, that's too bad.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So, shout out to Mimi's fam. It's great meeting y'all. I hope you enjoy this episode and future episodes, and I hope that you've enjoyed binging past episodes.
Oh, hey, I have something to share.
Oh, yeah.
So I got into, over the break, I got into acupressure in your ear.
Ah.
So I have these seeds that are little rhinestones.
Oh.
That I put on different acupuncture
things.
And I've noticed that I've been sleeping so much better. And my daughter, really? She doesn't believe in this at all.
Oh.
But I've been sleeping so much better. And
nice.
Feeling better and not as tired. And
so are they actual, like, earrings or?
No, they've got this little gold seed, which is, I think it's a magnet that's covered with 14 karat gold plate.
Oh, okay.
And it's very teeny tiny. And it has an adhesive backing on it. So you peel it off the card, and then you put it on your ear, and it sticks for about 3 or 4 days.
Oh, okay.
So
nice.
So I'm still learning which pressure points. I guess, you know, like in your ear, if you feel like a sore spot, that's where you need to put something, and then you feel better.
Really?
And, like, I have it on my heart area, and my Shenfei area, which I'm still not quite certain what that is, but I think the Shenfei area is a whole body type of thing.
Yeah, I'm like, but I'm sitting
like, where are you sore? Yeah.
I'm sitting over here poking at my ears, and I'm trying to find a spot that doesn't hurt.
Okay.
So, I don't know if that's a thing, but
well, if you think you want to try it, I'll bring my seeds next time and put some in.
There you go. Yeah, because, like, you're talking about in the cartilage, right?
Well, the whole ear actually is pressure points for different areas of your body.
Oh, okay.
So
I feel like this falls into the realm of, like, acupuncture.
It does.
And, like,
it does.
Stone, chakra,
placement. Absolutely.
Maybe cupping?
Mm-hmm. I don't
know. That
might
be a little bit further.
I don't know much about cupping, but, like, have you ever heard of the acupressure points in the feet?
Yes.
It's the same concept is that.
Oh, okay. Huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, we will have to, we'll have to see about those seeds next time.
Yeah.
Maybe see if that helps.
I will bring some.
Cool.
What's your favorite color?
Let's see. Well, I just got a new iPhone and I got a purple case for it that I quite, quite enjoy. I got an OtterBox for it, and the slimline OtterBox cases, I'm just letting you guys know, if you have an iPhone and you want an OtterBox case for it, maybe stay away from the slimline, because it's plastic on the outside and it's quite slippery.
Okay.
So, like, if you say you have a favorite chair and you're inclined to set your iPhone down next to you on the arm of the chair.
I'm guessing you did that.
the vibration from the iPhone, it has a tendency to send it shaking off of its, yeah. So the rubber cases on the outside, although they are quite chunky and blocky and whatever, mm-hmm. I like them much better because you can get more of a grip. But this is a very pretty case.
Yes, it is. It is pretty.
It's plum and violet? Violet and plum, I think.
Okay.
So the inside is plum and the outside is violet. But, yeah, very pretty. It very doesn't pretty. Really super suit me. I just like the color. So good. I was like, all right. But, yeah, purples are good. Blues, grays.
Well, I'll bring all my different colors and you can decide what you like.
Yeah, sounds good. All right, so I guess without further ado, we'll jump in here and start our stuff.
All right, sounds good.
Oh, before I forget, shout out to the Stretch community, too.
Hi, Stretch.
Because I saw a few of them at Mimi's show, as I was saying. So shout out to Mimi's family and to the folks at Stretch, who actually got a brand new president. The lady who was the interim president mm-hmm. was chosen to be president, so that's very cool.
That is cool.
So, yeah. All right, I don't know.
Stretch, recommend it to all your friends and family. It's a great place to go to school.
It's pretty cool. It's a cool place. All right, so I have a piece that is longer. I think you were saying that yours is on the shorter side.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you want me to go first?
Do you
want to
go first? You can go first.
Or do you want to go first?
It doesn't matter to me.
Oh. Okay, well, I'll go first and I'll finish.
If you go first, then that means that I can finish the rest of my donut.
There you go. I'll go first. Enjoy your donut.
So, I'll just sit here and into the microphone as she's reading. No, I'll try to shut my face and be quiet.
Okay. So, we are traveling to St. Louis, Missouri. And we're going to the Lamp Mansion. So, in 1838, a German grocer came to St. Louis, Missouri. He opened a grocery and made his own beer, a lager that was a family recipe, which everybody in the town liked, and he couldn't keep it on the shelves. Mm-hmm. So, his name was Johann Adam Lemp. Because of the growing demand for his lager, he sold the grocery and opened a brewery. The area in which Johann built his brewery was over a few caves near the river. Mm-hmm. The caves kept the beer cool, and he would bring blocks of ice from the river to help keep the beer even cooler.
Which must have been a tremendous amount of work.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Cutting the ice out, then hauling it back. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very heavy work. Hard work. So his business was huge, and he and his son William built a new brewery, which spanned 5 city blocks. But I think William actually built it after his dad died, or around the same time his dad died.
The caves and stuff?
No, the big brewery that spanned 5 blocks.
Oh, yeah, I think that was William. The main mansion had a lot of land with it, so I guess what they did was they just built up on the land that they had. They purchased the land, or the extra land around them.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So, okay. So then...
Excuse my Ebola.
Yeah. So the brewery was doing great, and they made millions and were very wealthy and very revered in the city. Mm-hmm. In 1864, the Lemp family was also the first brewers to distribute from coast to coast. The beer is known today as the Fatzlaff brand.
Ah,
yep. I have no idea what brand that is. Mm-hmm. I'm not a beer drinker. But it's kind of interesting that it's still around.
Yeah, yeah.
So Johann Kemp died August 25th, 1962, so 2 years before the big brewery was built, at which time his only son, William, took over the business with his wife, Julia. They had 9 children. One child died in infancy. William and Julia built a stately mansion near the brewery, which connected to the caves where beer was stored. And what they did with the caves is they turned it into an auditorium mm-hmm. and a theater. Yeah. And they had a big pool in there.
Yeah.
And
it was like party central.
Oh, yeah. It sounds so cool.
Yeah.
It really does.
The ultimate, like, swanky party mm-hmm. pad.
And they would yeah. hire performers yeah. to come in and perform.
Yep.
Yeah. I would have loved to see that. That had to been, I mean, think about it. They really didn't have a whole lot of lights like we think of mm-hmm. now. You know, yeah. electric.
Yep.
So, the caves with firelight and it must have been just beautiful.
Yep.
So, in 1901, Frederick Lemp, William's oldest son and heir, died. He was sickly all of his life and he was only 28. William became very depressed after his son's death and he kind of became a recluse. He didn't go out and socialize as much as he used to.
Right.
I
think I heard that he was also very paranoid about germs.
Well, what's...
He got to be very...
Right.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a family trait, that yeah. as the older they all got, the mm-hmm. more paranoid, the more yeah. Reclusive, the more depressed, the more anxious they all became.
Yeah.
Kind of a very sad...
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, a really unfortunate situation, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're just all kind of paranoid and odd about stuff as they get older. I don't know.
Right, right. But Lemp's daughter, Hilda, had married the son of William's best friend, Milwaukee royalty.
Mm.
Do we know who it is? Gustav Pabst of the Milwaukee Brewing Company.
Yep. That's a big fish.
Yeah, and Gustav's father, who was William's best friend, was Frederick Pabst.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in 1904. And William becomes even more depressed and even more despondent. Mm. He came down one morning, had breakfast with his family, went up to his room and shot himself.
Yep.
February 13th, 1904. Very sad. Then William Lemp Jr. took over the business. He was a spendthrift. He liked to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
Clothes, art, furniture.
Mm-hmm.
He bought country houses. He had servants. His wife, Lillian, also was a spendthrift.
Mm.
And she wore mainly lavender clothes. So she was considered the lavender lady.
Yeah.
And I guess there's still a picture in the mansion of her.
Yeah. Very elegant
yeah.
looking lady. Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, that's what mm-hmm. he liked. He liked beautiful things around yep. him. And she was his trophy wife for a while.
Yeah.
But William was also known as Billy.
Mm-hmm.
So I refer to him more as Billy in the rest of the story. So,
yeah.
Okay. So let's see. They got divorced. And when they got divorced, the day of the settlement or the last day of the divorce hearings, she came in all black. Other than that, she had always worn lavender. Well, after the divorce, she became a recluse and stayed inside, didn't socialize much. And I didn't look too hard, but I didn't find anything about her death. I wasn't interested at the time, but now I wouldn't mind going back.
Now, in terms of Billy's relationship with his wife, I feel like there was something about she was given so much money per day,
mm-hmm.
and he told her that she had to spend that much money per day, otherwise he would not
give her any more money.
Give her any more money at all.
Right, I think it was $1,000.
Yeah, so he was that much of a spender, a big spender, that he was like, I'm going to give you like $1,000. You go, you blow it on whatever you want, but you have to spend it all. You have to spend every penny.
Me, I'd buy jewelry.
Yeah.
versus...
Well, that seems like an easy way to go through $1,000 a day if you're just going to buy jewelry. But yeah, I mean, she would just buy clothes and buy jewelry and...
I wonder if she could have donated the money if he would have had an issue, if she had given to charities or something.
I think that there was like a... the whole thing was she had to spend $1,000 a day. So yeah. I don't know if like she just came back without it, if he would be like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, or if he would be like, so where did you go shopping today? You know, yeah. And then she would have to like account for it. I don't know if he was that weird or paranoid about it.
He's an odd duck.
Yeah.
Strange
fella.
Yeah. He didn't care much about the business and he kind of let it run under.
Yeah.
So Billy's mother, Julia, died from cancer in 1906, and she was horribly in pain when she died, just miserable.
Yeah.
I feel bad.
Well, back then, there was nothing that they could do for you.
Except give you morphine.
Yeah, I mean, you basically just were on morphine all the time, and you just kind of wasted away.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, that's really sad. So during Prohibition, all the breweries really... If they didn't go under, they got close to going under. It really hurt the business. He turned the caves into something like a speakeasy, and he would have parties, and he would have prostitutes down there.
Yeah.
And there was a story that said he may have, it's not sure if, he may have had an illegitimate child with one of the prostitutes that he kept up in his attic. Or... The other story is that it was his legitimate child that he had with Lillian, but they were ashamed that the baby, because the baby had Down syndrome, that they kept him up in the attic.
Yep.
So it could be either one of the stories, which is so sad.
Hard to believe that high society used to be such that...
Yeah, it used to happen a lot. They used to do that a lot, and they called them Something Room. The Something Room. They made a movie of it.
Oh.
I can't think of the name of the room. It'll come to me like in two days.
Yeah,
anywho, so. Okay, so Billy's daughter, Elsa, committed suicide in 1920. And when Billy heard the news, he came to the house and all he had to say was, "Well, that's the Lemp family for you." What a douche. I mean, he really was a douche. Lemp became more and more depressed and reclusive, and he shot himself through the heart in 1922. Billy left behind... Now, I'm not sure if it was Billy's brothers or if it was his father's brothers. Because I don't know. I kind of read that weird. So, but given the time period, I think maybe it was Billy's brothers, Charles and Edwin.
Oh, yeah. I think that when I was looking at this story, too, I had some problems right there figuring out whose brother was who. And
right. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah, it was kind of weird. The
could be either or. Right. So Charles was a banker, and he was fine financially, and but he decided to move into the mansion. And he fixed it up, and... As time went by, he became increasingly a recluse and depressed, and his brother Edwin wanted him to leave the mansion, but he refused to leave the mansion.
Yeah.
In May of 1949, he was found dead of suicide. And Edwin, it doesn't say if Edwin ever moved into the mansion, but I don't think he did. But when Charles died, he left a note. It said, "I did this by my own hand. Nobody else did this," and it said that he didn't want to be bathed or washed or have his clothes changed or anything. He wanted to go right to the crematorium, be cremated, and taken to his farm. So Edwin did that, but the weird thing is nobody can find out where his farm was, so they don't know where he is.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
It is interesting.
I mean, just kind of a weird little tidbit.
Huh.
So then Edwin lived out his life. He didn't live in the mansion, but he died of natural causes in 1970. And at that time, there were no other lemps left.
Right. Try saying that 5 times fast.
Yes. So the family kind of died out. So the Lemp Mansion was sold and turned into a boarding house. Yeah. And residents would hear a voice coming from the attic. It's presumed to be the voice of Zeke, who was the illegitimate or legitimate son, depending upon the stories of Billy. Right. And a man has been seen peeking around the girls' rooms, like in the stalls, and trying to get a peek of the girls. So when they go to check out who's there, nobody's there.
Yep.
But they think it's Billy because he was such a creeper.
He was a womanizer. Yep.
Yeah, he was a creeper. And some residents have seen glasses thrown against walls and have smelled heavy perfume, which they think is the Lavender Ladies.
Yeah.
And they also walked through cold spots. In 1975, the house was sold to Dick Pointer and family. They remodeled and turned the house into a restaurant and inn. The workers at the house believe the house is haunted. So many workers who are working on the house would leave and not come back. They would hear footsteps. They felt cold spots. Things would move on their own.
Yeah.
They were really freaked out by just being there.
Right.
Staff of the restaurant had seen glasses move through the air, sounds of people walking, moving things, and nobody would be there. They'd hear whispers. Nobody would be there.
Hmm.
People have seen ghostly images and shadow figures. Doors would lock and unlock. The piano would start playing on its own, and voices could be heard, and no one is there. Hmm. The Lavender Lady has also been seen. The house was mentioned in Life magazine in November 1980 as one of America's 9 most haunted houses.
Oh, okay.
The restaurant and inn is still open today, and the current owner, Paul Pointer, says people come here expecting to experience weird things and are rarely disappointed.
Hmm.
So nice. That's my Lemp Mansion. So, you know, St. Louis isn't too far away.
Yeah, right. No, that'd actually be a pretty interesting trip.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they when they turned it into a restaurant and an inn, there were a lot of reports of paranormal activity. Particularly, I think they said in the bar area, there would be glasses that would be thrown, and there would be, like you said, like the strange, strong smell of perfume, and so yeah, apparently it's quite haunted. There's a lot going on there.
Cool.
So yeah, we can add it to our road trip list.
Yeah.
Our ever-growing road trip
list.
Yeah,
we need to start planning some of these weekends here.
Yeah. Well, I just got accepted to my MFA program at Naropa University in Colorado.
Oh, my gosh.
So this summer we'll probably be out for road tripping. But maybe in the fall of the year? We'll have to wait and see kind of how the schedule pans out. I don't know how much work is going to be involved.
Right. Is this online then, or are you actually going to Colorado?
It's the majority of it is online. It is a low residency program, though, so I do have to spend 1 week and 2 weekends a year in Colorado.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, should be fun. Should be interesting. I've never been, so.
Is it in Denver or Boulder?
Boulder.
Okay.
Yep, it's in Boulder. I got really excited when I found out that it was in Boulder because the Ramsey house, you remember JonBenet Ramsey?
Yeah.
The little, whatever the, what do they call them? Toddlers and Tiaras?
Yeah.
Her home is there in Boulder. And apparently a lot of people like do drive-bys and like take pictures of it and whatever. you know, and I'm kind of a true crime geek, so
who do you think did it?
I kind of geeked out about that. Honestly, I think it was her brother.
Okay.
And I think it was an accident, and I think that the reason why they covered it up was because they were unsure as to what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't want anything negative to happen to their son, so they were like, yeah, we'll just cover this up. That's just my personal
opinion.
See,
I think Patsy covered it up. I'm not sure if the father did.
Yeah, see, I don't know.
I don't know if he had.
He's adamant that he had absolutely 110% nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I just keep going back to that ransom letter, like the longest ransom note in history. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, come on. Like, nobody does that. Are you kidding me? Like, somebody stood in your house for, like, an hour? Right. Like, an hour and a half writing this ransom note? Like, and then to kill her anyway and leave her in the basement? I don't know.
Right.
And then, you know, what's the father's name?
I don't remember his name.
Anyway, so the father goes down in the basement. First names. Yeah, so the father goes down in the basement and he finds her, like, there, you know, lying in this little room. And the first thing he's inclined to do is take her and pick her up and bring her upstairs. I don't, like.
I think I can see myself doing that if it was one of my kids. But
then, you know, they're, like, moving her around. Right. Like, the police are still there. There's a couple of police officers still there. And they're, like, picking her up, moving her around, and, like, cradling her, and, like, you know, destroying all of this evidence.
See, I can see myself picking up my child and rocking my child.
Yeah.
Being that distraught. Moving? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and it's in the basement, and this is a huge house. Like, right. I don't know why. Like, I feel like I would cry out and try to get somebody else's attention and be like, she's in here. Yeah. And then probably I would do, like, the holding and the rocking thing because that's your child. You know, of course you're going to be distraught about that, but picking her up and, like, the whole display of putting her under the Christmas tree. And, like, it was
I don't even remember hearing that
It
part.
Was just weird. The whole thing was just weird. I don't know. I think it was a setup. Yeah. I think that something happened with her and her brother, and, you know, she just died. And they were like, well, what can we do?
Well, he was mentally ill, right? He had some problems?
I don't think so.
I think I remember reading that. I don't know.
I don't remember anything about him having, like, any sort of mental problems or anything. He was just, you know, he was just young at the time, and I don't know, I think a lot of people were like, well, you know, he should be distraught about this, but then they take him out and they interview him, and on the videos, he's just very, like, matter-of-fact, no real emotion at all.
Right.
He's just kind of, I would say that he's almost emotionally dead. Like, he doesn't express any.
So you think he was a sociopath?
Or I don't know.
But where is he now? Do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. He kind of like stays out of the limelight. You know, he doesn't want to be part of that whole scene. Which I mean, completely makes sense to me. Like, I wouldn't want to be part of it either. You know, people constantly asking me for interviews and, you know, reminding me that my, you know, sibling is dead and whatever, or reminding me that I killed my sibling, whatever the case may be. But yeah, that's like that's the very first true crime story that I remember.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was the first thing that I ever heard about on the news. And I feel like before then, like, everything was kind of like, oh, the news is on, turn it off, because this is going to be on and Janine's going to hear it.
Okay.
So, at this point, it was like, you know, I was watching TV on my own and changing the channels and whatever, and happened to see it. So, it was like the earliest true crime story that I remember, which I think is why it kind of hangs on, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I just constantly remember that one as, like, the first one, you know? But, yeah, very sad. And, like, that whole world of, like, childhood, you know, fucking, what are they called? Pageants?
Yes.
Pageants.
Yes,
kitty pageants. That's the word I'm looking for, kitty pageants. Yeah. I mean, it's just all so fucked up. And, like, you're making all these kids look like adults.
And then they have to perform.
Yeah, and then there's, like, grown-ass men sitting in the audience who are probably pedophiles.
Right.
Who are, like, watching these little girls done up like grown women.
Right.
It's just, yeah, it's just fucked up. It's just weird.
Although I have to say I did like watching it when it was on. I loved it when the kids would go off and the parents would be like, ah.
and lose their minds. Yeah.
It's like, well, you started it.
Oh, my. Okay, so, as I said before, my story is called Call and Answer the Enfield Poltergeist. Very famous story. Takes place in England in a tenement. It's a rented space by a single mother. And they have a lot of crazy shit happen to them while they're living there. And apparently it was all directly related to furniture that they got from their neighbor or something. Directly related to this chair that they got from their neighbor that apparently this guy died in or something. But yeah, it's kind of a crazy story, so I guess hold on to something for the ride, because it's cracked. Okay. So, I think I would be remiss if I didn't start the story by talking about The Conjuring 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Mimi, if you've seen it. Mm-hmm. Have you seen it? Okay.
Yeah.
So, this is kind of a plot synopsis of The Conjuring 2.
Okay.
So, there are spoilers ahead if you have not seen The Conjuring 2. Maybe hold off listening to this until, you know, you have actually seen it. Okay, so the movie opens, Amityville, Long Island. Ed and Lorraine Warren are at the Lutz home. They're investigating that whole situation. So the Lutz family claims that they've been experiencing paranormal phenomena, blah, 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 blah. The Warrens conduct a seance in which Lorraine has a vision where she sees herself in Ronald DeFeo's position on the night of the murders. So she watches herself committing all of these acts, first with Ronald's parents and then with his three siblings. At this point, Lorraine encounters some sort of demonic creature in the form of a nun, followed by a man dying. So Lorraine screams, Ed pulls her out of the vision and comforts her, and then we flash to three years later in Enfield, England, which is where this tenement is located. Janet lives with her older sister, Margaret, younger brothers, Johnny and Billy, and their mother, Peggy, as I said before, single mom. The Hodgsons are struggling financially. This is kind of where, like, I get a little, like, you're struggling financially, and now all of a sudden all of these things start happening to you?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Like, so yeah, they're struggling financially. The children's father has left them. Billy has some sort of a speech impediment that gets him bullied at school. Peggy has self-doubts as a single parent. So, I mean, they're really struggling. They're in a rough spot. So, at night, Janet and Margaret are sleeping in their room when Janet begins to feel what they call a disturbing presence. It sounds as though Janet is speaking to herself, but then she begins responding with a growling, raspy voice that claims, "This is my house." Margaret thinks that Janet is fooling around until she stands by Margaret's bed and hears the voice of an older man behind Margaret repeating the statement over and over and over again. Margaret turns on the light, finds nobody behind her, so they decide to sleep with the lights on. So then they flash back to the States. The Warrens are on a TV show talking about the Amityville case. There's another guest on that show that dismisses the case as a hoax. And then Ed gets very worked up about it, and Lorraine has to calm him down. Back in Enfield, Janet and Billy play with a turntable based on the tune of There Was a Crooked Man. Do you know that one? There was a crooked man that walked a crooked mile. He found a crooked sixpence beside a crooked stile. He bought a crooked cat that caught a crooked mouse, and they all lived together in a little crooked house. Yeah, yeah. I think that's how it goes. Correct us if wrong.
I didn't remember the beginning, but I remembered the end.
Yeah. So, as the children go to bed, Janet ties her arm to the bed. So she ends up on the floor of the living room with no idea how she got down there. Billy walks around the house and sees a toy fire truck on the floor. He rolls it into a tent in the hallway, but moments later the truck rolls into Billy's room. He goes back outside, rolls it into the tent, at which point this kind of booming, groaning sound is heard. Billy runs to his mother's room while Margaret hears pounding at her door. She opens it and sees no one outside until Janet returns, denying that she was pounding on the door at all. There's a lot of that in this story. So, the next day, Janet's watching TV. The channels start changing on their own. The remote has also vanished. Janet goes looking for it and finds it on the chair behind her. A ghostly figure emerges from the corner and growls, "My house." Janet runs back to the couch screaming. So, there's a lot of... he said, she said, within this story. They really exaggerate the situations a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There are, you know, accounts that say the children were thrown from their beds. You know, Janet had this growly, raspy voice, that seemed to be coming from behind her,
mm-hmm.
All the time, but there's no, like, creepy nun... like, there's no mention of full-figured apparitions. Like, there's none of that. This whole account goes on and on and on and on and on. The Warrens investigate. I'm going to kind of talk a little bit about what was found by two other investigators, Playfair and Gross,
mm-hmm.
who are very, very famous investigators in England. But so at the end, the Warrens board the train to head home. Even as Lorraine continues to express uncertainty over how it just appeared that Janet was faking when a camera was pointed at her, it seems to be that Janet only does this when the camera is pointed away from her, or she does a lot of, like, covering her mouth,
mm-hmm.
and then all of a sudden the sound comes. So there's a lot of speculation there that
okay.
it was not actually a thing. Ed plays the recording of the spirit's voice. He realizes that all of the recordings that they have are connected, so he plays them together, and it comes out to, "Help me, it won't let me go." And then Lorraine is pulled into another vision. She sees the ghost of this individual sitting in his chair, no longer threatening. He speaks in a riddle to Lorraine before a demon nun appears behind him and takes him away. Then they realize that the spirit of this individual is just a pawn, and it's really this nun that is the demon that's doing all of this.
Now, do you happen to know if there was any history of the building being connected with a church or a
I do not.
Place where nuns lived
no,
or anything?
No. I actually think that was just invented for the purposes of the movie.
Okay.
Like, I really don't think... Because they're talking about, you know, Lorraine Warren seeing the full-figured apparition of a nun.
Mm-hmm.
Like, full-on habit.
Yeah.
And that just was not something that comes up in the actual story of the Enfield
okay.
Poltergeist. So, Ed and Lorraine rush back to the home because, you know, they've gotten this message. So, they find the house is locked and the family is locked outside in the pouring rain. So, then there's, like, this whole thing about how Ed is going to die, and Lorraine sees a vision of, like, a sharpened stake or whatever, and this is how Ed is supposedly going to die. Then there's this whole, you know, conclusion where they're fighting this demon called Valak. So, Lorraine utters the demon's name and condemns it back to hell. Lorraine runs to save Ed and Janet in the nick of time. Janet is just fine. In the morning, everything's calmed down. Peggy and Janet thank the Warrens for helping them. And then they have that brief text at the end, you know, talking about the Enfield haunting and how it became, you know, one of the most notorious cases in history, yada, yada, blah, blah. Peggy Hodgson continues living in the house for 40 years until she dies in the same chair as the spirit died in. So that was kind of interesting. The Warrens return home. Ed takes the Crooked Man turntable and puts it in his museum right across from Annabelle. He then hears music playing from upstairs. Lorraine puts on Can't Help Falling in Love with You, and the two share a dance, and that's how The Conjuring 2 ends. So, I don't know. I mean, I really want to believe that, you know, this was an actual... thing that happened, but You know, I just don't know. I just don't know.
Well, I think for the movie, everything got embellished.
Well, I mean, you know, look at the Amityville horror. I mean, that movie was so just ridiculous, and I mean, there was no mention of, like, you know, the stairs being covered with blood, and, you know, like, it just, yeah, they just blew it completely out of proportion.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, in relation to the Amityville horror, in relation to the movie A Haunting in Connecticut, both situations where the Warrens were involved. In the case of the Enfield Poltergeist, my feelings don't really change. I still kind of feel like it was glorified to the point where Hollywood decided to pick it up because, you know, it's just going to be this tremendous story and we can do whatever we want with it.
Right.
But then you have people who are like, oh, well, this is what happened with the Enfield haunting. And it's like, no, that's what happened in the film. That's not what actually happened at the home, like, with the family. That's just what's been glorified for Hollywood to sell movies.
Right.
You know, get asses in seats. That's what they did to do that. So, the events that follow occurred at 284 Green Street, a council house in Brimsdown, Enfield, England, from 1977 to 1979. It involves two sisters, ages 11, that's Margaret, 14, Janet, and two brothers, age 10, Johnny, and Billy is 7. In August of 1977, Peggy Hodgson, a single mother, contacted the authorities regarding some strange incidents occurring in her home. Hodgson claimed that marbles and Lego bricks would come flying across the room at tremendous speed, seemingly appearing out of thin air. Pieces of furniture would move across the room or be thrown aside, and knocks and voices could be heard within the walls of the home. Some of these voices seemingly emanated from Hodgson's eldest daughter, Janet. She also claimed that the children would often be thrown from their beds or levitate. The police, of course, had no way to handle the issue, because what are they going to do? They can't arrest a ghost.
Right.
So even though a female officer on the scene actually had seen a chair move of its own accord, they were at a loss and just, I mean, they checked everything out and then they just left. Before we go any further, let's discuss briefly what a poltergeist actually is. Wikipedia, our friend Wikipedia, defines a poltergeist as follows. In folklore and parapsychology, a poltergeist, German for noisy ghost or noisy spirit, is a type of ghost or other supernatural entity that is responsible for physical disturbances such as loud noises, objects being moved or destroyed. They're purportedly capable of pinching, biting, hitting, tripping people. Most accounts of poltergeists describe the movement or levitation of objects such as furniture and cutlery, or noises such as knocking on doors. They have traditionally been described as troublesome spirits who haunt a particular person instead of a specific location. Such alleged poltergeist manifestations have been reported in many cultures and countries, including the United States, India, Japan, Brazil, Australia, and most European nations. Early accounts date back to the first century, so
wow,
very long time ago. So, at this point, enter Maurice Gross and Guy Lyon Playfair, two paranormal investigators and members of the Society for Psychical Research. Gross and Playfair would come to the Hodgson residence and spend countless hours speaking with the spirits in the home, requesting affirmation of their existence and asking them questions. Gross recorded these sessions. Many of them are available online. If you want to listen to those recordings, I don't actually know what the whole copyright dealio is on those recordings, so I'm not going to include them here, but if you go to our WordPress site, hauntheads.wordpress.com, you can look at the Enfield Poltergeist story, and I actually have a link embedded in there, so you can click on there and get taken to the YouTube site. So the questions that Gross asked received a high level of response. So for every yes or no question that was asked, a response was received. Both Gross and Playfair reported that many of the strange noises and whistling sounds, voices, barks, and growls came from Janet's general direction. Playfair asserted that the haunting was genuine, even writing a book about it entitled This House is Haunted, The True Story of a Poltergeist, 1980 it was released. However, Playfair did admit that he didn't believe all of the claims of supposed supernatural occurrences around the home. Playfair doubted the children's stories in many respects, but Gross and Playfair believed that there were also other forces at work in the home. So, of course, you know, at this point, news outlets like the Daily Mirror had a field day with the story, and the Hodgson's family ordeal was very often front page fare. They often hit the front pages of the newspapers. Because what better way to sell papers than playing on somebody else's, you know, unfortunate circumstance?
Right.
One of the creepiest parts of this entire haunting, in my personal opinion, has got to be the voice of who they called Bill Wilkins, a man who supposedly died in a chair given to the Hodgsons by their neighbors, the Nottinghams. The voice of Bill would speak through Janet. It was discovered by Gross that Janet was not actually using her vocal cords to create the voice. Rather, she was using a part of the throat that only gets used when someone is suffering from something like laryngitis. The resulting sound is grating and uneven, and it leaves the listener with a serious chill. Like, it's really... If she is faking it, it's pretty impressive. Because she does it for hours.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally makes this noise for hours. And it's not like, like using your vocal cords. She's using a part of her throat that when your voice no longer works, when you have laryngitis, you use this part of your throat to make, like, guttural noises. And so when they're trying to record these noises, they actually have a microphone pointed at the back of her neck.
Oh.
So the sound is actually emanating from behind her, but it's emanating from the back of her neck. So it's just like, yeah. Now, I am not going to say that somebody couldn't train themselves to do that.
But how old was Janet?
Janet was 14.
How would she know how to do that?
Well, I mean, if you try it enough. Like, I'm sure, I mean, look at,
ventriloquist.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they actually had a ventriloquist come to the house.
Oh.
And he was like, you know, this is the most experienced ventriloquist I've ever seen at this age. Like, yeah. He had no explanation for it. So, let's kind of flash back a little bit to the Fox sisters. You know, the Fox sisters, the rise of spiritualism as a religion.
Uh-huh.
The Fox sisters go into these huge auditoriums. They're making all of these clicking sounds and stuff themselves with their joints. It's not something that the average person would just be able to do.
Right.
You train yourself to do that. So that's kind of where I am on it.
Okay.
I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinion. But having seen some of the recorded footage of Janet sitting talking to this this interviewer, this reporter,
mm-hmm.
There's something funny going on there. Like,
okay.
Maybe the house was haunted, but that voice, I just don't think so.
Okay.
That's just where I am. As I said, Gross was surprised by Janet's ability to speak this way for long periods of time. It would often be, between 2 and 3 hours at a time that she would do this. When I was a kid, I would often make scary voices and try to freak out my friends, like while we were playing Spotlight in the Woods or
mm-hmm.
whatever. But I was not nearly the accomplished ventriloquist that Janet was. Many have cast doubt on Janet's ability to communicate with the other side, citing similar childhood pranks that they had pulled.
Do we know where she is now?
Yeah, she's actually, she's still in England. She does interviews, but she doesn't do many. She's not, you know, real super active. Like, if you called her and asked her, you know, could I interview you for this, she would probably say no.
Does, what does she do for a living, do you know?
Oh, I have no idea. Maybe she's a ventriloquist. I don't know.
Well, that's what I was kind of wondering.
In 2016, Chris French, a professor at the University of London's Animalistic Psychology Research Unit, discussed five reasons why the Enfield haunting was a hoax. He appears regularly in the media, and he's an expert on testing paranormal claims, so this is something he does for a living. Time Out London released this article in June of 2016 outlining French's ideas. So French states that the two sisters at the center of the case admitted to hoaxing some of the poltergeist activity. So they did come clean and say, you know, yeah, we did actually fake stuff. French says believers seem to think that we're too clever to be hoaxed by schoolgirls. But just because you didn't figure out how something was done doesn't mean that it's impossible. You know, conjurers have been doing this for centuries.
Right.
Literally since the first century.
Right.
Second, a classic photo of 11-year-old Janet levitating above her bed could easily be Janet jumping. There's lots of evidence to suggest that she's not hovering in midair. People have reproduced that image at home, jumping up and down on the bed. This case just isn't, it isn't strong, but it's a good story.
Yeah. Has Lorraine or Ed ever spoken out about how the girls said that, yeah, some of it was a hoax?
I don't know. Uh-huh. I haven't seen anything about it. But, yeah, I don't know. I'll see if I can find something on YouTube. If I do happen to find something, then I'll add it to a comment at the base of this article. So, thirdly, the spirit of an old man, Bill, who possessed Janet, was obsessed with periods. When Janet was supposedly possessed by the spirit of an old man, he took a lot of interest in menstruation. That's not something that you'd expect an old man to be interested in, but a young girl? There are so many question marks hanging over this case. It's just insane. Fourthly, eyewitnesses are notoriously unreliable. Witnesses in the Enfield poltergeist case include a policewoman who swore that she saw a chair move across the room. We've researched the unreliability of eyewitnesses. We've been able to show the power of suggestion in experiments in controlled conditions. To give you one example, we carried out a study where we showed people a video of an alleged psychic, he was a conjurer, doing a spot of psychokinetic metal bending, the stuff that made Uri Geller famous.
Mm-hmm.
After bending the key by sleight of hand, he puts the key back on the desk and says, if you look closely, you see that it's still bending. So typically, 40% of people report that it carries on bending when it is actually not. So the last point that French states, it wouldn't be the first case of a schoolgirl prank that got out of hand. I strongly suspect that it was Janet and her sister behind it. There are other cases where schoolgirl pranks have gotten out of hand. What essentially starts as a trick grows and grows. Then outside people get involved, and it's very difficult to backtrack. So French says his money would be on the girls. There were investigations by people who were convinced that the girls were doing all of these things themselves and that it was attention-seeking behavior. So, you know, I mean, he's an expert in the field. I'd be more inclined to agree with what he has to say than some of the other people who have come out and been like, yeah, you know, that's absolutely a thing, because the power of suggestion is very strong. What can we take from the Enfield haunting? I personally am a firm believer that the Hodgson family were victims of a ruse. Janet played them all for fools, I suppose in an attempt to make herself more visible. Just because as you get older and you have all these younger siblings, you know, you want to occasionally have the attention focused on you.
Right.
Janet gained this attention in the only way that she knew how. They lived in an old house. They just got in a chair that a man died in. She fabricated Bill Wilkins and another, you know, a few other quote-unquote spirits to further add interest to the haunted happenings in the home. in my opinion, there are no video recordings to support poltergeist activity. It seems to me that every time something happens within the home, the camera is looking the other way, or it's jerking one way or the other, and then the image is blurred, so you can't actually see what's going on. As I said, in the case of the Fox sisters, and the Amityville Horror, and the Haunting in Connecticut, the real motivation there was money. So, the Hodgsons say that they've never received a dime in exchange for their story. I don't know that I believe that, but that's what the world's been told. Mm-hmm. Something tells me that Janet probably never considered monetary gain, but when things started escalating and she realized that, oh, you know, all these newspapers are asking for our story now, maybe that was a motivator. You know, I mean, you're 14 years old and you're like, hey, you know, if I do this, then I get money for it.
I can't imagine that they wouldn't get money, especially after the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So
they must have sold their story to somebody.
Right.
Because there's no way that they would be able to just make a movie and be like, okay, so we're going to base it on, you know, your names and
right.
whatever. And but the thing that kind of irritates me about the movie is they set it up to look like the interviews with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even the clothes that they're wearing, they were wearing those clothes on that original interview with that reporter.
Those are the exact same
so
clothes?
They replicated the scene perfectly.
Okay.
So they basically said, you know, this is where Janet was sitting, this is where Margaret was sitting, this is what Janet and Margaret were wearing, this is the color of the sofa, this is where the coffee table was, this is what picture was on the wall. Everything is just perfectly replicated.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was intentional that they wanted to add an air of, you know, this is actually something that
right.
happened. We are recreating this because this actually happened. And, yeah, as you go through the movie, it's like, what? Yeah, no. Like, this, there was no nun.
Mm-hmm.
There was no, like, nun creeping around there.
Well, unless it was on the site of a cemetery or a nun's house or a church, I wouldn't think why
yeah.
would a nun be there.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, they're talking about, like, the kids are thrown from their beds. And it's like, yeah, okay, the kids are thrown from their beds, but...
Okay, then if the kids are thrown and they're in danger, you leave?
Get them out of the house?
Yeah,
like, don't... Yeah, apparently that never occurred to anybody.
Hmm.
I think that originally when things started happening, the mother actually, Peggy actually did take the children over by the neighbor. But it seems like they quote-unquote got used to the activity, and then they just lived in it, because they were like, well, this is our house, and this is the house we're renting, and we're paying to rent it.
Right.
So we're just going to live here, because it wasn't as if they were actually getting hurt. Like,
mm-hmm.
it was just, oh, you know, I got hit today by a marble. Or whatever, or
mm-hmm.
I hear knocking in the walls, or, you know, the kids are thrown from their beds, and it's like, well, yeah, but they're not, I mean, they weren't thrown from their beds and thrown into a wall.
Yeah.
They were just thrown on the floor.
And they didn't have
know?
Any bruises or cuts, right?
I mean, they might have had bruises and cuts, but if you jump from your bed and you land on the floor, I mean... Even if you're fabricating that,
mm-hmm.
there's a possibility that you could, like, bump your knee or something and
right.
get a bruise or scratch yourself on, you know, a rough piece of flooring or whatever. I mean, there's just, yeah, I don't know. There's just too much speculation. I just can't, I can't hang my hat on that and say that it's actually, you know, poltergeist activity.
Right.
Maybe the knocking was an actual thing. But, I mean, this, maybe, stop knocking. I mean, maybe the knocking was real, maybe it wasn't, but I'd be more inclined to believe that they were receiving knocks, you
mm-hmm.
know, in answer to certain questions, than I would be that, you know, things were disappearing and reappearing, and you know, things, random things being thrown from your bed. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just a little much. The one thing that did get me was when Janet is supposedly channeling the voice of Bill Wilkins, and Gross asks her to ask Bill how he died. And Bill says something to the effect of, I was sitting in the chair in the corner of the living room, and I went blind, and I had a hemorrhage, and I died. So that, to me, I don't know, it seemed, the way that it was explained, it seemed very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And then a little later on down the line, they were contacted by a relative of this Bill Wilkins, who did say that he died in the house,
mm-hmm.
and did say that he died of a hemorrhage. So
maybe she's a little bit...
I mean, I think there's bits and pieces of it, you know, that, like, you can say, yeah, that's a thing. And then there are other parts of it that you're like, no, you know, that's just...
Well, maybe she's an empath and she can pick up things and she didn't know what to do with it and nobody was believing her.
Yeah.
So maybe then she had a...
Yeah.
Make up some things and then it just got out of hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the other part of it is, too, Gross actually performed an experiment where he told Janet to take a mouthful of water. And she held that water in her mouth while Gross communicated with the voice of Bill Wilkins. And at the end of this particular communication, Janet spits out the mouthful of water. And so it's like, yeah, I don't really know what to make of that.
Hmm.
I mean, there are ventriloquists that can take water under their mouths and still do everything mm-hmm. that they
right.
do with their, you know, their dummies or whatever, but...
You wouldn't think at age 14.
A 14-year-old girl, yeah, it's like, I don't know.
How would she have trained herself to do that?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So, I don't know. Either she was a 14-year-old girl that wanted attention and had a passion for ventriloquism, or she was a 14-year-old girl who was legitimately possessed by... the ghost of this Bill Wilkins who, you know, died in a chair in the corner of their home and had some sort of brain hemorrhage.
Hmm.
I think we will never know.
I guess not. There's a lot of things we're never going to know.
Yeah.
But the tales are interesting.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. Let me tell you. Oh, all right. So, God, I feel like we've been talking forever.
I know.
We've been talking forever?
We've been talking a long time. That's good. We always do.
Yeah, it is good. And it's nice, too, because it's not, you know, we don't script ever.
No.
You know, I just kind of, I read bits and pieces of the work from the blog, but I don't ever, you know, I like to keep it organic, so.
Right.
So, yeah, it's always nice when it goes on for, like, over an hour, and you're like, yeah, this is awesome. This is fantastic. Look at, we don't need a script at all. This is the shit.
Yeah.
This is the shizzle, yo. Yeah. All right, so do we have anything else for this week?
No.
I don't think so. I think we're good. Do you have anything coming up this week?
Next week? Well, I'm probably going to have another show in July or August.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to start getting ready for that.
Oh, yeah. So you're going to do some new stuff?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, it's exciting. Let's hope, you know, it takes off and I can have a real business. And
yeah, yeah.
Because I don't want to stop doing my artwork. I love it.
Yeah, I'm very envious of Mimi's ability to create beautiful artwork, because I think that the last piece of artwork I created... it was supposed to be a daisy, but it could have been a daisy or an exploding arsehole. one or the other.
Well,
If
you would ever like me to teach you how to make stained glass.
Oh, I would love to learn how to make stained glass. That would be fantastic. I would love that.
Yeah, I think Joanne would too.
Yeah, yeah. I just recently sent a message to the lady that taught me music in elementary school.
Okay.
And she does stained glass. but she does Newfoundland-themed stained glass, so she's actually creating a piece for us for our front window.
Nice.
And it's going to be the Cape Spear Lighthouse and the view out from Cape Spear in Newfoundland.
Nice.
And she's going to incorporate puffins somehow.
Oh.
Because I love puffins. They're, like, my favorite bird next to mynas and... shit, what are they called? Button quail.
Nice.
And frizzle chickens, because who doesn't love a good frizzle chicken?
I don't know what a frizzle chicken is.
A frizzle chicken? You don't know what a frizzle chicken is?
I don't know what a frizzle chicken is.
It looks like Big Bird.
Is it big?
Like they have like the... No, they're not huge. They're just like regular... They're not like Big Bird sized, but they have like the hairdo of Big Bird. Like,
really?
Like crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, they have crazy
Are they white?
They come in different colors.
Okay.
And they have like...
Fuzzy legs?
Fuzzy legs and fuzzy feet.
Okay. then I think I know what they're supposed to
be. Yeah, their feathers are like kind of like wonky and curly a little bit. And like just crazy. I don't know. I just love them. I think they're so cute.
Why don't you get one?
I don't know where I would keep it. Well, I mean, I guess I could move everything out of this room and like keep it in here.
Well... During the summer, you could keep it outside, and then in the winter, bring it into the basement.
But, you know, in the winter, here it gets so cold that I just... Yeah. But I don't think that I would want it in the basement, because they create so much dust.
Oh.
They're very dirty.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would essentially have to set something up outside so that it could be heated. And then I would need to get permission from my neighbors to keep chickens.
That's true.
Because I'm in the city, so...
Right.
That would be... In Mequon, probably not as hard.
No, you can have chickens in Mequon now.
Yeah.
So...
Maybe I'll just keep them at your house.
No. No.
No.
Sorry.
No. Not even any discussion.
No. No more animals at my house.
Well, coming up for me is just basically more work. I have another class for driver's ed starting in South Milwaukee on Monday, so I'll be out there doing that, and still doing the data entry thing.
Good.
Trying not to panic about my MFA program. That's really
the,
you know, just the amount of work that's going to be involved. I'm really hoping that I'm going to be able to adequately keep all the balls in the air.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be a juggle, but...
I think you'll get into your rhythm within a couple weeks.
I mean, so cool that I get to go to the school that houses the Jack Kerouac School of Disenfranchised Poets.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. Was created by a friend of Jack Kerouac.
I have no idea who that is either.
Jack Kerouac?
I'm not a literary.
Oh, my God. You don't need to be literary to know Jack Kerouac. He's fantastic.
Do you have anything memorized of his that I might know?
I used to have a poster in here that I covered up so that I could display my my other poster. Here, let's see. My favorite Jack Kerouac work is On the Road. Here we go. Okay, so... This is probably my favorite Jack Kerouac quote, and it is from On the Road. The only people for me are the mad ones, the ones that are mad to live, mad to talk, mad to be saved, desirous of everything at the same time, the ones who never yawn or say a commonplace thing, but burn, burn, burn like fabulous yellow Roman candles exploding like spiders across the stars. Really a fantastic writer. Absolutely love.
He wouldn't
love
like
me
because I yawn all the time.
Yeah, Kerouac is right up there as far as love for me with Bukowski. I love me some Charles Bukowski, too.
I don't know.
He's fantastic. Either. You don't know Bukowski?
I've never been into poetry.
Mimi, you gotta... Man, they're classics.
I like smut books.
Like smut books?
I do.
My God.
I love them.
I'm deleting that. That's terrible. Smut books. So you probably love 50 Shades of Grey.
No, I never read it.
Oh, you never read it?
Okay. I like Christine Feehan. few others that I can't remember their names.
Oh. Yeah, mostly everything I read is either, true crime related, or it's police procedural novels. I like those.
Okay, so, in February we're thinking of going to Vegas.
Mm.
And there's a mob museum there.
Yes, there is.
I'm so excited about that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. There used to be one in Chicago dedicated to Al Capone, and they closed it because they said that they were glorifying
I thought it was still there.
No, apparently it closed. Unless they opened it again. I don't know.
Too bad.
Yeah, I don't know. All right, so it sounds like we are good for this week.
Sounds good.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to us and putting up with us for the last hour. I'm sure that sometimes it's trying, but you stay with us, and we appreciate that.
We sure do.
So, until next time, I am Janine Mercer.
And I am Mimi Steven. Peace out.
Peace out. And we are signing off for right now. So thanks again, and be sure to stay spooky.
Out on that long white table.